fantasy author J.H. Fleming.
And I'm science fiction and fantasy author Philip Dreyer Duncan. And we have a very special guest with us this evening. I'm pretty sure our guest is who J.H. wants to be when she grows up, because yeah. Our guest has been an opera singer and has been a member of a folk band and is an award-winning author who has written a lot of books about witches. Louisa Morgan, who also writes as Louise Marley and Kate Campbell, is the author of popular titles like A Secret History of Witches, The Witch's Kind, The Age of Witches, and The Great Witch of Brittany. Her newest release is not about witches, actually. It's titled The Ghost of Beatrice Bird, and I'm sure she'll be happy to tell us all about it. So, welcome to the show, Louisa. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We met Louisa for the first time at the World Fantasy Convention by crashing her coffee clutch.
No, you made it a success.
That too. It was fun. That was the most fun I've ever had at a coffee clutch.
Yes.
It was fun.
For sure.
All right. Well, tell us about your latest title.
The Ghost of Beatrice Bird came about from two sources. One is that I've always wanted to write a ghost story because I have so many real-life ghost stories in my life, from my own experience and from my family's experiences, and then my friends. I'm like a magnet for them, so I'm always getting more stories. But in this particular case, I have a friend who was working as a psychic, as a medium, but she had to stop because she couldn't get the spirits to leave her alone. She hadn't found a way to close the door. So morning, noon, and night, she had spirits banging on her, wanting her attention, wanting her to do something. So she had to just quit. It was her only way. And that gave me the idea for Beatrice Bird, who is a psychologist in the Bay Area in California in the 60s. And she's a naturally empathic person anyway. But when she decides to experiment with LSD, her empathy gets completely out of control. And she begins to see ghosts that people have attached to them all the time, and she can't get away from it. So she tries, and that's where the plot, that's kind of the inciting incident of the plot. They are not really ghosts, and she knows that. It's just what she calls them. And when a real ghost shows up, things are different. So it is a ghost story.
Oh, that's fun. That sounds exciting. And that releases, has it released already, or it's coming out very soon?
It came out yesterday, November 21st.
November 21st. So nice. When this airs on Monday, listeners, it's already out. Go get it.
Yeah, it'll be six days old. It'll be walking by now. So
so I get Kobo's, I guess, newsletter with releases and stuff. And I got one yesterday with, I got two yesterday. One with Beatrice Bird and the other was one of your witch books had it in there.
Cool. Good. I'm really glad to hear that.
They're out there pushing it for you. They're doing the work Yay. For you.
Yeah. Oh. Well, as you guys know very well, promotion is part of the job. And it's, in my view, the hardest part of the job. This sort of thing is fun and easy and enjoyable. But promotion, especially self-promotion, it's uncomfortable. So we do it anyway. Well, you guys know. You have to do it.
Yeah.
But you have a very good, that was a very good, synopsis. As far as having to stand in front of someone and talk about what your book is about, that was a phenomenal, phenomenal pitch, if you will.
I always think that trying to say what our books are about is the hardest thing because you want to give enough to give somebody an idea what it's about, but not so much that you give things away. And yet, you're dying to spill the whole story because you've worked so hard on every aspect of it. So, I mean, for me, it takes me a year and a half to write a book. So I live with it really closely for all that time. And yeah, it's hard to just give a thumbnail. I always think someone else should do it for me, so I don't. But then a lot of times when they do it, then I'm like, no, 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 that's not right. You got that wrong, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and a lot of yours have been sort of historical fantasy, right? And I think you you try to stay very close to like historic events and things. How much time do you have to spend for like research? What's that like for you?
I really do research a lot, hours and hours and hours. I have a rule that I only, after the initial research, so I find out something about my time period that I'm going to be working in, my rule is I only get to go and research if I need it for the story, because you can spend all of your time. I mean, historians do that. But you're right, Phil, that in my historical work, I started it with the Kate Campbell books, and, well, there was one before that. Don't let me get started. But so in my historical fiction, the history that we know, that we believe is true, is the foundation for what I do. Because I really think of myself as a historical fiction writer first and a fantasy writer second.
Okay.
The witches to me are very real. There certainly were people doing just what they did. And the world that they live in, there are dates and famous personages and events that we know or believe happened. And I just try to stick as close to those. I'm just not into violating what we believe to be fact.
Okay, that's fair. That makes sense. Now, if you were going to give like a tip for somebody who wanted to play in the historical fiction space and dealing with research and stuff, what would be, you know, what would be something really useful for them?
Well, first of all, you have to decide if you want to do it the way I do it, where you don't violate history as we understand it, as we believe it to have taken place. And if you make that decision, then the rule that I just described is really important, because you can spend all of your time doing research and reduce the time that you spend writing the story. And the story, of course, is paramount. There is a whole genre called alternate history, where people, writers, deliberately violate what we know to be historical fact. And then there's another sort of a subcategory where writers will play with historical fact and apologize for it in their notes, which is fine as long as, you know, we're clear. But it's just not the way that I work. So, and also, my recommendation to people interested in writing historical fiction is work in a period that interests you, that's really... that's fun for you. The first serious historical fiction that I did were the Kate Campbell books, which were set in the 20s in Seattle, which I know very well because I lived there for years. And I just, it was absolutely a blast learning all about what Seattle was like in the 1920s. So I really enjoyed the work, but boy, that was a lot of research. I thought that the closer you get to the present day, the harder the research would be. But right now I'm working in the first century, and it's not really true. There are still things that we know and that we believe to be true, and I don't want to get anything wrong.
Sure, I am often like the idea appeals to me, but I struggle with it because I feel like I'm really bad about rabbit holes. Anyways, like I was working on a title today in a modern setting, and all of a sudden I was like, I need to know all about methane gas. And then I just started reading about methane gas and how to harvest it. And I was like, this doesn't really, I don't actually need to do any of this. I can just say they had a piece of equipment for harvesting methane gas, you know?
Well, some of those shortcuts are really valuable. And also sometimes it's changing point of view. So you have I don't write science fiction as you do, Phil. So, and I think that's really hard. Because my brain doesn't work that way. But a great way to get around a problem when you don't want to have to get into it in detail is to shift to a different point of view and sort of gloss over that part. The more your readers already know about the thing that you're writing about, the less you need to tell them. So
yeah,
you know, we can make an assumption like a car. You don't need to describe how a car works, how the combustion engine and drives the chassis. I have no idea what any of that is because I'm no good at it. But the thing is, people know that already, so you can just say car or what kind of car or something. It's when it gets futuristic, it's tough.
I was just going to add the other point of view just reminded me of another option would just be if you're in your character's head, you know, you're limited to what they know. So if they don't know what this thing is, then describe it the way they would not knowing. It's like,
exactly.
I don't know, it harvests methane gas. I don't know what you call it, you know. Right. If you're in their head, they don't know what it is. It's fine.
That's right. That's such a good point to remember. And I really like close point of view, so that always works for me. I stay in a character's head and try to make it clear when I've gone into another character's head. And it's true. And I actually think that that adds a lot of needed tension and mystery to the story that you're telling. So it's a good thing to remember.
Yeah,
I don't know, JH, on the methane gas thing, I was in Wyatt's head, and I'm sure the readers are all going to expect Wyatt to know all about gas harvesting.
But that doesn't mean Wyatt has to tell them what he knows.
No, it's a joke. Nobody would expect, nobody who's read those books would expect Wyatt to know anything about science. All right, well, I know while we have you here, JH absolutely is going to want to ask you about your time as an opera singer, so...
Well, you just went ahead and did it. So I guess how you got started in that, what that was like. Anything you want to share with that?
Well, being a singer was fabulous, and I wanted to be a singer since I was 5 years old. So I also wanted to be a writer when I was a kid, but the drive to make music was stronger at that time. So, you know, I started studying in high school, studying voice. I play piano and I play guitar, and now I play ukulele. And so being a singer is a lot like being a writer. And by that I mean it requires practice regularly and discipline regularly. You can't just sing when you feel like it, especially if you're working as a professional, which I was fortunate enough to do. You have to be ready to do it. So the two disciplines connected very well for me. To be a singer is show business. It just depends. Unlike writing, it is kind of a zero-sum game, because if I wanted a role in an opera, there was only one that would suit me, and I would have competition for that role. So that part was challenging. And like every artistic career, I think every career, I should say, up and down. Sometimes I had lots of work, and I was happy with that, and sometimes I thought, oh, it's all over. No one wants me anymore. And then something would break loose and I would be busy again. Mm-hmm. So, and it's the same with being a writer in a way, except that it's not a zero-sum game. Because if I sell a book, doesn't mean you're not going to also sell a book.
Right.
Both of you.
Right.
I was going to say, while you were describing that, it sounded like you were describing my life, because I had very much a similar thing. I wanted to not necessarily sing opera in... like, you know, in a theater or anything. I was a big fan of like Charlotte Church and Sarah Brightman. And so I wanted to do what they did, where I'm recording songs, but it's those operatic type songs. And then also, like, I'm taking ukulele lessons. I just had my lesson earlier this evening.
Oh, did you? Oh, fun.
So, yes.
Fun. Well, yes, I play a baritone ukulele, so it's probably a little different from yours.
Yeah. I have a soprano.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's so fun.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. And it's great because it's very portable, so I can take it with me when I go places. And also, singing and being a musician can really have a really positive effect on your prose writing, because you learn, you understand in a visceral way form and rhythm and pace and voice, which is an important, I don't just mean the singing voice, I mean the voice of the music, whatever it is. I was a folk singer first, and that was great. That was really fun.
Yep. It's more similarities. I think we mentioned, I just released my debut folk album with my bandmate last month.
Is it just the two of you?
Yeah, we had some guest musicians on this album, just on, you know, they each did a song each. We may have one of them on more songs next time, but we'll see, because he's got three little ones, so it depends on how busy he is.
We'll get him. Busy, we'll get him. We got a plan.
Yeah. Oh, it's so much fun.
Yeah, so I guess bouncing off of that, so you did opera for years and the folk singing. So when did you actually transition to writing full-time, and what kind of led to that decision?
Well, the two things overlapped, because I was still singing professionally, but I had always, as I said, when I was a kid, I loved to read, and I'd always had this idea that one day I would actually write stories. And I had an idea for a story one summer for a book, I thought. It was a book, as it turned out. But during the time when the musical season ends and you're waiting for the next one to begin, so I had a little time. And so I just started writing my story, and I got about, 50 pages in and realized I had no idea what I was doing. So I went to my local community college and took a class. And it wasn't a very good class, but because I knew nothing, it was really helpful. And I really recommend that. And since then, I've taken many workshops and classes, and it's been really useful. So then I started writing this book. And in the class, I met some other writers who we formed a writer's group, which was tremendously supportive. And I just worked at it for a while. I was singing and I was teaching at a college there in Seattle. And I just kept at it, because making a career as a professional musician means you keep at it. You just can't let disappointment derail you, or you'll never get anywhere. Also, it gave me a thick skin, which not every writer gets a chance to develop. So I was really glad of that. And so 4 years later, that book became a published novel, which is, that's pretty good. That's pretty good timing, actually. But
yeah.
I still had a lot to learn. So I kept studying and working, and I've just continued. Perseverance. One of the great opera singers, Friederike von Stade, she said she thinks that perseverance is a strong element of talent. And I think that makes sense for writers as well.
Mm. Sure.
Because there are disappointments, but it's good if you don't let them make you quit. You don't want to quit.
Right.
Right.
J.H., do you have anything else on the music side that you wanted to ask?
Oh, I could probably think of several, but we'd be
you can't
here probably
steal the whole podcast.
All night. I know.
And I can go on and on and on. Yeah. My joke is always that every novelist should be an opera singer first, because we learn scene, and we learn how to develop character, and we learn pacing, which I mentioned. We learn the building of tension and the release of tension. You know, all of that translates right over into, especially writing novels, which are more complex. Mm. So
that's it. I'm going to become an opera singer.
Yeah, good luck. Very good luck. I wish you well.
So the other thing that you've been doing recently is the TikTok.
Oh, yes. Yes, because I mentioned earlier that ghost stories are all around me all the time. I just attract them. It's the funniest thing. So I have a wonderful social media advisor who happens to be my daughter-in-law, who's brilliant. And I said, I really want to tell first-person, second-person ghost stories, because I know so many of them. And I can't decide on the platform. And she said, well, you should go to TikTok. And I was like, no, I don't want to. She talked me into it, and there was a learning curve, but I did figure it out. So I've been on TikTok as LouisaMorgan75 for several months now, and I'm telling ghost stories that either are mine or my family's, or second-person ghost stories, which are like once removed, but they're all real-life stories. None of these are... My novel is completely fictional, but these are the real thing, and I'm telling apparition stories, and poltergeist stories, which I'm in the middle of now, doing poltergeist. And my next category is going to be presences, which encompasses quite a few different forms of paranormal experiences. And they're real. These things actually happen to me. In fact, when you two and I were at World Fantasy, I was having a hall conversation with a young editor named Emma, and she goes, oh, I have a ghost story. You want to hear it? See, this is what happens to me all the time. And it was one of the best ones of all the ones I've done. It is fantastic. It's just fantastic. I love that story. So these are, it's really exciting. It's really fun.
It sounds like you really enjoy doing those too.
The first ones I was really uncomfortable. You're recording on your phone, and you're talking to your phone, and I'm used to having audiences, like people out there. But I've gotten used to it now. I think it's going a little bit better. But the stories are good, and that's what really matters. And people like them. I've had several people say that it's really fun for them to go to TikTok. And I mean, I don't know that anybody wants to watch me tell these stories, but anyway, it's great. And so now the book is out, but I still have stories to tell, so I'm going to keep going.
Why not? Why not? I mean, yes. It's still weird for me whenever we click record on this. I still am like a little like, what am I doing? That's why I make JH introduce herself first.
Yeah, a little imposter syndrome is in every one of us. I don't know of anybody who doesn't have it in my personal circles anyway.
The few people I've met that I think don't have it,
Probably should.
Yes. All right. Well, on that note, should we switch over to the news?
Sure.
All right. For our first news story this evening, Kobo turned in its book report. They didn't actually read the book, but they did watch the movie and scribbled up some notes, and they ended up getting a B, so word is their mother is not going to ground them. That's not true at all. What it is Kobo has put out their annual book report about readers, basically. And since they're Canadian-based, the report focuses on Canadian readers, and it indicates that Canadians read 13% more in 2023 than they did in 2022, which is pretty impressive. It accounted for over 9,000 years worth of ebooks. 9,000 years
worth of hours?
Did I say years? Because that clearly says hours in front of me. Years would be absurd. That would be an absurd amount. Thank you, JH, for correcting me on that one.
I was wondering when I saw it in the notes, like 9,000 years? What?
Yeah, well, I'm not very smart. Anyway, the most popular day for reading was January 8th, and supposedly our friends in Calgary and Winnipeg like to read after dinner. So, Calgary friends, look at you, Shane. Winnipeg friends, look at you, Gerald, Sherry, Evan. Is that true? You guys read after dinner?
I'm curious about the January 8th. Like, was that a special day, or...
Yeah, I don't think it actually says. It just shows that was the day people were reading the most ebooks. Oh. I don't know. But...
Oh, so this would just be Kobo ebooks. It's not counting physical books or ebooks read elsewhere or audiobooks or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I think it's just Kobo ebooks, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's good anytime people are reading, right?
Yeah. It is good. I'm confused, though, about why reading is going up now. I would have thought during the pandemic, reading would have been higher, but apparently it wasn't. So
yeah,
what were people doing?
I don't know. It's interesting, Louisa, because we just, a couple weeks ago on one of the episodes, we read a report from, I think it was like the National Library Association or something, that showed people's usage of libraries was going up. So, and it seems like everything we see across the board is like reading is increasing, audiobooks are increasing, so hopefully book sales go with it.
I mean, that's a good trend, just curious on what's causing it.
Well, I don't know.
I think it's great that audiobooks are getting more and more attention, because I've thought that would happen for a while. I've believed that. I think it's nice because it gets us away from the screen. I read in every format, hardcover, paperback, ebooks, everything. And I love audiobooks. And it almost feels like audiobooks are a different art form in a way.
Yeah.
Right.
And some of them are so good.
Yeah, I just read in audiobook form the latest in this, you know, giant series. And I've told Phil before, it's had the same narrator the entire time, and it's from a first person point of view, so like that narrator is that character to me, and it just makes the whole thing feel like, I guess, kind of more personal. Like, I feel like I know the character even more than I would if I read it on paper, if that makes sense, because like I guess because I can hear her voice in a way, like physically hear it, not just in my own head.
And I have some of my, I have some narrators that are my favorite, that I will buy an audiobook just to hear Davina Porter is one. Oh, she's just fantastic. And there are some others as well. So it's great for me because as a writer, I spend way too much time looking at words. And it's nice to just listen and be reminded how beautiful they are and how expressive they can be.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Did I hear a puppy?
You
I think
did.
I heard the puppy. what is it?
He's a border terrier.
Aw.
And he's complaining at me now because I'm sitting here and not doing anything for him.
How dare you?
Not as if I haven't been taking care of him all day long.
And his whole life, probably, but, you know.
Yes, of course. Of course.
All right, JH?
Good. All right, so it looks like airport libraries may be a thing now. Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky International Airport had added a library back in May, but it seems to be really popular with travelers. Sounds like it initially was just digital, but it's grown to physical books now. They require a library card for digital. Phil, do you know if that's a library card like with the airport or with like your local public library?
It didn't specify, but I'm not sure, to be honest.
I'm curious how that part works. But for the physical books, it looks like anyone can just check anything out. And also, if you when you finish with it, you can return it as well. Is it just at that airport, or are there other airports that it... if you pick one up at one, can you drop it off at another? I'm curious of that.
So I don't think they... It doesn't sound like they have, like, a connected thing happening. It mentioned in the article that there's some other places... doing the same thing or looking to do something similar. But effectively what they've done is they've taken the local library there. You know, like every library has books they need to get rid of, right? And a lot of times they'll do little sales and things. So what they're doing is they're taking books that they would otherwise be selling or getting rid of, and they're putting it in this airport library. So they don't really care if somebody takes it, doesn't bring it back. But at the same time, they also allow people to drop one off, right? So if you've ever been the person who, like, before a flight, you know, walked into the little store and bought a book you might not otherwise have bought just so you could read it on the flight, and you land in that airport, you can toss it in their library and leave it behind.
Like little free libraries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a lovely idea, and it seems to be, it sounds like it's gaining traction, so.
That's really cool. I mean, I'd probably never use it just because my backlog of books that I own that I haven't read is so large that it's going to take me years and maybe never to run out of them. But for other people who don't have that problem, that's really exciting.
You know, JH says that all the time, that you know she'll never be able to read all the books she has. But at some point, they are going to cause the floor to collapse. And when that happens, they're all going to get ruined and she'll have to start over. So then maybe she will be able to read everything she owns. All right. And our next one is Amazon author pages getting their groove back. The Zon has put out a notice on the KDP forums that our author central pages are getting a makeover. It says they will now be multi-page, will feature our most popular books more prominently, will add a quick look feature, and have a better layout. It looks like so far they've implemented that in like UK and France and Germany and a few others. There's nothing in there to say when they're doing it for the US, but sounds cool.
Yeah. I'm curious what that'll look like. Yeah, I don't know. I've looked a lot at, I've been playing around with my website and other sites that I use as an author. And so knowing that that's changing, like, it's going to be one more thing I'm going to have to go play with and see what it's going to look like.
I mean, I don't know if they're giving us a lot of customization.
Yeah.
It didn't sound like there was going to be customization for us. I think their Zon robots will probably just lay it out however they think it needs to be, and we'll live with it.
Yeah. Once in a blue moon, I go and check mine and make sure that all the books are there. But mostly, I don't do anything photographs, and I make sure all the titles are listed. And once in a great while, I think of like fixing my bio so it's up to date.
Yeah, that's right.
They right. can't do that for me.
Right. Yeah, so I do need to do that. I was also thinking of, I know in the past they had the option to add, like, if you have a blog and you can link that so that way it automatically updates on your page. And mm-hmm. same with, you know, different social media sites. So if they had things like that, that might be something I would look at and see if I can set up, because I do have multiple sites I'm updating now.
Yeah. Same problem. If I go on there, the picture's going to be old and the bio is going to be really old.
Yep.
So I probably should set like a planner. Here's a tip. Here's your tip of the week. Set a planner for once a year to go update all of the Amazon Author Central, your Goodreads, all the places.
It'll take you all day.
It will.
Yep.
I find that, especially since the loss of Twitter as kind of a basic social media site. I spend way more time because I'm juggling so many more sites where I feel like I should make sure that someone's not looking for me and that I should respond. Mm-hmm. So it gets, it can seriously eat into your writing time.
Yeah, right. Too true.
All right, next news story. So Draft to Digital just announced that they have released over 1 million books. So they've hit that milestone, and also the authors using the platform, they claim, have earned a combined $250 million.
Millie.
So that's Millie. That's a pretty awesome milestone to hit.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a lot, right?
Yeah,
those kind of numbers really do show that from a self-publishing, from the indie standpoint, they really are a competitor mm-hmm. with Amazon, right?
Yep.
So.
Yeah, Jack would have been one of those million he released in October.
Yeah, yeah. That's the only one you've done with them, and I have not done any through Draft to Digital. So, you're one of the million. How many's of those 250 milli bucks did you get?
Zero so far.
Oh, okay.
They have not sent me anything.
No,
I do see that they have an estimated royalties just like Amazon does, but I don't know when their payouts are. I haven't gotten anything yet.
But you're not getting the full 250 millis.
No,
it's not just
nowhere
you.
Near that.
That's the other million authors. The other 999,999. Got it. All right. Hey, it's that time. Are you doing the voice this time, or am I doing the voice?
I think it's your turn.
All right. Louis said normally our friend Chris is on the podcast with us, and he does a special voice for our AI part, but now I'm going to try to do it.
Okay.
In our continued coverage of our robot overlords... How was it? Is that all right?
Great.
Sounds
right.
Perfect.
So Amazon, still speaking of the Zon, they just put out a statement explaining how they're utilizing AI to try and spot fake reviews. Well, they didn't really explain how they're doing it. They just said they are. But essentially, whenever somebody submits a review, before it goes live, there is an AI which analyzes it, and it looks for sort of like known indicators they've compiled for fake reviews or scam reviews, that sort of a thing. They said that the vast majority just pass and get posted. There's no problem. But whenever one is flagged, they said there are a number of things that they might do. They didn't really go into detail on what those things are, but they did say that when they had, when they were confident that a review was fake, they would take action. That might include revoking that account's ability to make reviews. They might block that account entirely, or in some cases, like we reported a few weeks ago, I think, if there are pirates involved, they might actually seek legal recourse. So,
good.
Yeah, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Remember, kids, only you can prevent review bombing.
Yes. Yes.
All right. And then our next one and our final story is apparently Spotify is going to utilize, or is, I shouldn't say isn't, is going to, they already are. So Spotify has partnered with Google to utilize Google's cloud AI to help make new recommendations for listeners. So this will include music, podcast, and you guessed it, audiobooks.
Yay.
So basically, instead of their boring old algorithms trying to suggest content for you, there's going to be a robot who is going to try to make recommendations to things that you might like. Apparently, it analyzed 5 million podcasts and 350,000 audiobooks.
Oof. Wow.
Yeah. Jeez. That's a lot. But, you know, usually the AI stories that we cover are not good news. I think the first one is good news. I think that's a good use for AI. And the second one, if it works, I'm not messed up about that. I mean, they're going to make me recommendations either way. They might as well be ones I actually want. JH isn't convinced. Do you think...
Yeah.
You don't think the robot will know your taste well enough?
It might, but that doesn't mean I want it to know my tastes, if that makes sense.
There you go. There you go. It's a little creepy, really, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Like, so, for example, I was looking at a new rollerball pen recently, and I did it on my computer. And since then, logging into my phone on any social media or even just the internet, and I'm getting ads for that pen.
Of course.
And even that, I'm just like... I know I like this pen. I know I want to get it at some point. You don't have to, you know, stalk me and show me ads for it everywhere I go. So even that annoys me. So this feels like it would be the same, but potentially, I don't know, could be worse.
It feels intrusive sometimes, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. It was, sure. When it first started happening a few years ago, it was terrifying. I felt like there was somebody haunting my house, you know, watching what I was up to. I've gotten so used to it now, and I think this is funny, that I don't know if it'll work the same with book recommendations, but so when I look at something online that I'm thinking about I might want to buy, I don't even bother saving it because I know that all the bots are going to give it back to me. So right. I don't know if it'll be the same with books. I think it's so hard these days with so many amazing creators being able to put their material out for us to access, that it might be a really good thing to have to have data, right? And by that I mean data, the Android, looking at all that stuff and making recommendations. It might save me a lot of time because I don't want to always have the books that are recommended to me just be like the ones that I've written. I like to read a lot of different things as well. So, I mean, maybe it'll work.
Yeah, and I guess in the case of the rollerball pen, so I'm imagining, say, someone looks up my book or your book, and then they're seeing ads for that book everywhere they go. That may not be so bad. Buy my book. But at the same time, as a person who's had that happen to them, like, would that have a negative impact then? Because are they going to react like I did, where it's like, oh my gosh, yeah, I know, I've seen it a million times.
Right.
So, I don't know. That could go either way.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting journey we're on because I'm involved with the Authors Guild trying to stop AI. I've forgotten which platform it is that's scraping our books without permission.
Right.
And I'm absolutely opposed to that, obviously. They didn't ask. They don't give us any compensation. Right. They just use them. And it's not like they're just using a couple of paragraphs. They're using entire novels. And I found two of mine on the list. So I'll just recommend to everybody, if you have concerns about that at all, be sure to follow the Writer Beware page, which the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America supports. And Victoria Strauss keeps it up, and she's just amazing. So,
yeah.
And she's right on top of all this stuff.
That is actually one of the sites I check every week when I'm pulling the news stories together to see if she has anything.
Mm-hmm. She's amazing.
We should have made that announcement, and I didn't even think about it because I'm a dingus. As of this week, both JH and I are actually officially full-fledged members of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Association.
Writers Association.
I can't say it in conversation. I can't say it on the podcast. We are members of SIFWA now.
SIFWA, yeah. Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
When I qualified, I was could not wait. I was so excited to be an actual member. That's really cool.
Right.
They do good work. They do a lot of great support for speculative fiction writers. And it's important, including like access to medical insurance. Obviously, Victoria's work with Writer Beware. And it's a great place to check out, you know, if you have questions about agenting or any of that. So, and it's just fun. And all the cool people, all the cool people join. So.
Yes.
That's right. If the three of us are in there, you know that's where the cool people are.
That's it. That's
it was funny. So, JH posted in the forum the other day and, you know, kind of said hello or whatever, and very quickly got a response from one of our good friends. It was like, oh, I didn't know he was in there.
Yeah, he was the first person to respond and say welcome.
Nice. Yeah. Now you're in the in group, so.
Yes, that's awesome.
All right, cool. Are we ready to do our tools segment?
Sure.
All righty.
All right, for our tools segment this time, we're going to let Louisa talk about keeping it simple for a little bit. So go ahead.
Okay. I have so many colleagues who use all kinds of fancy software and spreadsheets and things to write novels. And I always say I'm a lean, mean user. I use Pages, which is the program that comes free with your Mac. And I like it because it's simple and straightforward. If I had my way, I would still be writing in WordPerfect, which was the ideal program for me. But since I can't get it from my Mac, because I like a blank page in front of me, like it used to be when we typed on typewriters, which is like in the dark ages now. But and I don't use Scrivener or any of those things. I mean, I do keep a couple of files when I'm working on a book. One is character descriptions and names, because especially the minor characters tend to slip away while you're working. And I do keep a rough synopsis that I occasionally refer to, but often never do. I just, when I'm writing a novel, the book is in my head. As I said, it takes me about a year and a half to write a book. And the whole thing lives in my head. Like I can feel the entire shape. We talked about opera, and it's a little like that. Because when you're performing in an opera, you have the whole thing in your mind. And so when I'm writing a novel, it feels like that. I have the whole thing in my mind. Little details, you know, I need to check back and refer to. But so that's what I mean when I talk about keep it simple. I mean, some people might say that's really old-fashioned. But at least I'm not writing longhand and then transcribing on a typewriter. And then I have been writing on a computer for a long time. And I type really fast, so that works best for me. But the less distractions there are for me, the better I will work. Mm-hmm. And so even in Pages, you can have a part of the page that will show you what's going on with your fonts and all of that. I always get that off of there. I want a blank page, and I want nothing to distract me from what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So that's my keeping it simple. Pretty straightforward. Also, the other thing that is simple for me is that I write in a very linear fashion. I start at the beginning, and I go forward. One of my mentors and my idol, Connie Willis, the great science fiction writer, I call her Connie the Goddess, and she told us one time that she synopsizes, and she plans out what her scenes are going to be, and then, get this, hold your breath, she writes her scenes out of order. Well, that would make my head explode, so I can't do that because I am very linear, very chronological. And if I run into a big problem that I have to fix, I have to go all the way back to the beginning and feel how it goes. That was kind of important, that feel how it goes, because that's what works for me. So I don't map it out on a spreadsheet or anything like that. And it has gotten me into trouble with timelines a little bit. because I can make a mistake with a timeline that way, since I don't do a spreadsheet or use a calendar or whatever. But that's my process. Yeah. Maybe a little archaic, but it works for me.
Whatever works right. for you. And you know what that's I just right. heard?
Yeah. I heard a train.
I heard a train. It's time for a train ad. We're going to have to record a new train ad for this one. Yeah. But, all right, well, train ad coming up.
Jack remembers being human, but that was long ago. Now he's just a scarecrow, content to spend his days quietly sitting in his field and watching the clouds go by. He has but one friend, Evelyn, yet that is enough for a scarecrow with fleeting memories of his days as a man. Until Evelyn makes a deal with a witch and is cursed to become a crow. Together, Crow and Scarecrow must embark on a quest to break the curse and make Evelyn human once again. Caw-caw, caw-caw, tookie, tookie. In Jack of Crows by author J.H. Fleming.
So I was going to say I am very much a linear writer as well, and I learned that, well, I already knew that, but I kind of reinforced that for myself with one of my novels that I wrote, and I decided to try that, where I was like, okay, let's just try to write out of order, whatever I feel like writing today. And I ended up calling that book Cluster because it was a mess, and it took forever to fix it and get everything in order. So I'm like, I'm never doing this again.
It ended up as a good book.
It's awesome. It took a lot of work to get it there.
So which book was that? I want to know which book.
That one is called The Last Mages of Greybrook. I'm actually querying that one right now, so it's not out yet.
The last Mages of Greybrook?
Mages of Greybrook, okay. Yes.
Cool. I think it's really interesting when you have a book that gives you trouble, and then you figure out, and you work really hard at fixing it. I wrote a book quite some time ago called The Child Goddess. And I love that book, and it came out fine in the end, but I think I started it and, like, wrote 50 pages of it three different times before I found where that book was going. And that's why I always have to start again at the beginning and go through.
Right.
And people will say, well, you should synopsize, and then you don't have to do that. But for me, part of the excitement of writing is finding out what's going to happen and how the characters are going to get where they're going. And so a synopsis for me is... Well, Greg Bear said his synopses were all lies. Mine aren't exactly lies, but they are just basically like the pirate code. They're kind of a guideline, you know. So.
Yep.
Well, you said something in there also that really, really struck a chord with me. And that was, you know, going back to the beginning and feeling the story again. So I have very much the same thing. Like if I'm a quarter of the way into a book or half or three quarters, doesn't matter. If I have to stop for any amount of time, if it's more than like a week or two, I have to go back to the beginning and reread everything to get myself back into it. Like, it doesn't matter that, like, on an intelligent level, I know what was happening and I know sort of what I need to write. I have to get myself, like, back into the story is how I kind of see it.
Right. It in the flow. That's what I'm thinking. I'm really glad that I said that about feeling. I don't think I ever put it in those words before, but because it's so much that way for me, that it's so the creative process is so integral to what I'm putting on the page. So,
I was going to add, in Phil's case, I do wonder if that's something with just you in general, because you do the same thing with video games. If he's playing a game with a really in-depth story, if he's away from it for too long, he'll just start over.
It's the same thing. And like the way she described that, you'll have to go back and listen. This might be the first episode you actually listen to, JH, because... Louisa nailed it on the head. It's the same thing with my books. Yeah. It's the same thing with games. Like, when I walk away from it, I know on an intellectual level what was happening, right? And I know what I need to go do, but I'm not feeling it, right? Like, I need to be re-immersed into it again in order to pick back up.
I get that.
Which actually, believe it or not, just the last few days is the first time I've force myself to not do that and manage to get back into the state of things.
For Blade
Which Mage. Is why I actually wanted to talk about sprints a little bit, because Like we said in the last few episodes, JH and I decided to do NaNoWriMo like 10 minutes before it was going to start. And because I hadn't done it in years. We literally on October 31st at like 10:30 at night, I was like, should we do NaNoWriMo? And she was like, I guess. What are you going to do? And I'm like, well, I can't continue a book. If I'm going to do NaNo, I have to start a new one fresh. But so I woke up the next morning, I started writing a brand new book. And I actually not only managed to keep up the pace, but I was keeping up closer to like 2,800 words a day. And I actually finished last Sunday with the 50,000. And I've continued that since then, but that was starting to get so loose and kind of scattered on me that I said, I'm going to let that sit for a minute and I'll switch back to the Blade Mage novel I was halfway done with. And so I jumped back into it and I've managed to keep that pace, which is why I want to talk about sprints, because that was sort of how I did that. And what, so at this point, as of today, I think I've written 56,000 words, 58,000 words this month, something like that. Something insane. I can't even believe. Yeah.
It's a lot.
I can't even believe I've done it. But a big part of that is when we decided to do NaNo at the beginning of the month, we asked around some of our writing friends to see if anybody else was doing it. And there's a handful who were, and we made a private Discord group where we kind of cheer each other on, and we get on and we do sprints together. So a writing sprint basically would be like, I usually do 30 minutes. So I would call out to the group, hey, I'm going to start at this time. I'm going to run for 30 minutes, and then I'm going to stop. And in that 30 minutes, I'm just going as fast as I can. I'm not trying to be sloppy. I'm not trying to be so fast that I'm sloppy, but I'm just staying in the flow state and not letting anything interrupt me. And what would happen is at the end of that 30 minutes, I would have 1,000 words or 1,200 words, sometimes even closer to 1,400 words. And so if you can do that, and you can do that a few times a day, you can write a lot of words very, very quickly. They still need to be cleaned up because they might be a little worse than when you're sitting there just typing away at your normal pace, but it is, I've kind of forgot. We used to do them together all the time, me and JH did, but it's been so long I forgot how productive I could be with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I'm really focused, I can also get a lot of words in a writing sprint. Lately, for some reason, my brain's been more distracted, so I've been averaging more like just a few hundred at a time, which is still good, but not the 1,400 Phil's crashing out over there.
Yeah, it's not all pretty. Let's just be clear. It's not pretty.
Nope. Yeah, I think I first came across them when I first got the Writometer app, because it has a built-in sprint thing. So, like, you have your different projects set up, and you can go to a specific project, choose to start a sprint, and then when you log your words, it's tied to the project you were in when you started the sprint. So that would have been, 2013 or 14 when I discovered that? So
yeah, probably.
About a decade now.
I'm pretty sure you were the first person to tell me about them.
Yeah. I knew they were a built-in feature in that, and then the first time I did NaNoWriMo, the other people who were doing it, I was part of a group who was doing it, and they knew about sprints as well, so it was somewhere in that time frame that I came across them.
Obviously not my style, so I've never done NaNo because ever since I've known about it, I've always been under contract for a book. Mm-hmm. So I'm deep into something, mm-hmm. but I'm not fast.
Right.
I'm not fast. 50,000 words in a month, never going to happen. I'm just slow. But I do understand the sprints thing because several workshops that I've done, not 30 minutes, but we would do 5-minute sprints mm-hmm. or 10-minute sprints. And I was always stunned at how creative, with a bunch of writers around me, how creative that could be.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and I super shout out to our No Life November Discord crew. So Shane and Tracy and Becca, Julie, William, and am I missing anyone? JC. Did I say JC? Sorry, brother, you're very forgettable.
Nope.
it's fine. He's been on. He's been a guest. It's fine. But yeah, there's like there's definitely a part of me that's like, there's days where I'm like, I do not want to try to grind this out, but I'm like, man, I don't want to have to go on there and tell them I'm not doing it, so I'm just going to make it happen, you know? And now I'm really trying to see how long I can maintain this sort of rhythm. And I think it came at an important time for me. I started a new day job this year, and you know, it's eats up quite a lot of time. And so I was kind of, for a good portion of the year, it's kind of out of my flow for writing and editing and really having a hard time getting consistency. And it felt like I couldn't. And by jumping into the nano thing and being like, no, I'm just going to try to do this, and I don't care if I get no other free time, I'm just going to try to make this work. Not only did I prove to myself that I could get back into a rhythm to create, now I've stacked on top of it, well, now you're going to get 3,000 words a day, and you're going to edit at least 6,000 words a day, and I'm still maintaining all of that and having a little bit more time beyond it. So it's like, it doesn't matter if I have this job, like I can get into a rhythm again, you know?
Yeah, that's good.
Well, I always say to my students, if they were as busy as I was when I started, now I'm a full-time writer, but when I was still singing and teaching and writing, that, you know, if you write a page a day, at the end of a year, you have a book.
Yep.
If, you know, if they're decent pages, you don't have to write
massive
amounts. That's a long discussion we can have about writing fast, writing slow. Everybody's process is their own, but work can get in the way, definitely.
It really can, and it can leave you where you just don't feel like you have the brain power to do it, right?
Oh yes,
right.
So true.
Yeah. So I don't think for me it's not even so much about the amount wasn't so much the end goal for me, is just proving that I could have a daily habit. And the fact that it was big was, you know, big numbers was like, no, not only can you get yourself back into a daily rhythm, but you can do a lot, right? So I don't necessarily have to carry that on forever, but just proving to myself and getting back into the habit of jumping into my head every day and splattering it out on a page, right?
Yes. I think saying that it's a habit is a very important thing. Just pedagogically, the fact that you do it every day, well, not everybody does it every day. That's not so important. But to have regular writing times where, because your subconscious, and I know this from my musical life, and maybe you do too, JH, that your subconscious is waiting for that door to open. And when you have a regular practice, whether it's music or writing or whatever, your subconscious is ready to deliver because it's been waiting for that door to go open so it can come blasting through. So I love it that you say you have the habit. It's a really important thing.
Yeah, I think so too. Mm-hmm. And I think it's too easy to fall out of that and then to like sort of convince yourself, you know, I can't have time. I don't have time, or I can't do it right now. I don't feel up to it. You know, I'll have to wait maybe tomorrow or maybe this weekend when I'm not busy or whatever, right?
Yeah, it's like waiting for lightning as an energy source. You never know when it's going to come. So you sit down regardless. And the funny thing is, when you sit down and you set your goal just to be there, the inspiration comes. A lot of that is reducing distractions, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely makes a difference. It's easier to write when JH doesn't come in and throw things at me.
Not.
I didn't say you did. I just said it's easier if you don't.
For me, it's like turning off the internet.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people listen to music. I can't do that. I just have to get everything out. So white noise is okay. Yeah. Specific noise is a problem for me.
Yeah. I used to do music with singing. Used to always be Loreena McKennitt's various albums, and I just had those on repeat. But after a while, I just got to the point where, like, I couldn't do the singing anymore. Like, it has to just be instrumental if it's music, anything with actual singing. Because I guess because as a singer myself, like, I want to sing along, and then, like, I'm not focusing on my story. I'm focusing on the song. So
If I'm listening to music, I'm listening to music. So I just can't do it.
Yeah, I can. It's got to be, I can do music sometimes. Like, sometimes I need background noise. Sometimes it's too quiet. And then I need, like, music with no singing. And then other times I need dead silence. Yep. And I never know. I can't even predict which it's going to be until I start trying to work.
I was just going to add, I also like the kind of ambiance videos. So there, I found one, it's a website, it's called Rainy Mood, and it just makes it sound like there's like a rain and a thunderstorm going on.
That might work
for me.
So
it's like, it's not music, it's not voices, it's just the sound of a rainstorm. And you can find others on YouTube, whatnot. Like, they have some that makes it sound like you're in a coffee shop or, you know, all sorts of places. So those are pretty neat sometimes.
Yeah, I actually love coffee shop writing. That's why, I mean, white noise is fine. But, like, my favorite kinds of music would just distract me. But rainstorm, that would work for me. That would work. Also, where I live, it's starting now. The season is starting when it snows. And there's something about falling snow that is just, whoa, it's just perfect. Of course, it makes no noise, but it's beautiful. Until there gets to be 4 feet of it, and then that's enough.
Right.
Stop already.
Yeah, we don't get enough snow where we're at. I would like a little bit more.
No.
I'd like a little bit more.
Yep.
Well,
same.
You know, too much of a good thing.
Yeah, right.
Sometimes. When we have to shovel a path so the dogs can go out, that's kind of tricky.
Right. It can be a little much.
And my dog's legs are kind of short. So.
Oh. Well, so are mine. So I don't like snow too tall. I had some things for Creatives on Fire, but then I just realized that I'm not really excited about talking about them. So instead of switching to the segment like we normally would and then talking about my topics, I think we'll just let me just ask this, Luisa, and then we'll finish out. What do you think your advice would be for somebody getting started today, writing fiction and trying to break in? How is things...
So starting to write?
Yeah, and so from your view, because you've had many successful books over a very long career, how has things changed? How have they evolved? And what's kind of different? What do you see that's different that people need to kind of know?
Well, I kind of want to correct the record. I have had some successful books and some that were not successful. And I think that's typical for most of us. So, I wouldn't want people to think that because you have an unsuccessful book. I had one really good science fiction novel just killed by the cover, just ruined. And that was one of the low points in my career. But I have two bits of advice for people starting out. The first one is sort of basic artistic advice, and JH will probably get this. It's so important to write. I always call it sing with your own voice, and it applies to writing as well. Write in the voice that is natural to you, that satisfies you. Don't try to write like somebody else, because it never seems to work if you're trying to imitate. I learned that in my musical life. You know, trying to sing like somebody else who was successful didn't mean that I could sing like that person. I had, and it was I spent a good amount of my career trying to figure out exactly how my voice worked for me. And so it was easier for me when I started writing to trust my writing voice. And the other thing is, it's really important to write, and you guys are probably doing this, write what you're excited about, what really enthuses you. Don't write to trends, because by the time you finish the book, market it, get it into print, that trend will have changed. It will have moved on. And it's also not so satisfying.
Right.
If you write the thing that really matters to you, you will do your best work. In my experience, that's the case. And of course, the first thing you have to do if you're starting out is do it, write it. Don't talk about it. Don't say, well, I'm going to be a writer one day. I mean, it's okay if you're too swamped to do it. I mean, it can happen if you're like home with small children or whatever. But just getting started, put the words on the page and don't be afraid of them is the first thing. I mean, I'm sure some of my early drafts of my first book were really embarrassing, but as I said, I had developed my thick skin in my musical life, and so I'm pretty tough that way, because sometimes what we do is not so great. But if you just can persevere and keep at it, do it. Don't wait. Don't say, Phil, you said earlier something about waiting till the weekend or until you have more time or until you feel like it. That time never comes.
Right.
And there's plenty of bigger, much bigger writers than me, like Stephen King, for example, who will talk about that. Just do it. Don't wait. Don't wait for the perfect moment, because that never comes. Mm-hmm. So, and his book on writing is a great intro. I hope everybody reads that, because it's a great intro to the writing life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100% recommend.
I went far afield there. Sorry, I meant it to be simple, and it, okay. it wasn't
that
was simple.
Fantastic. I 100%, 1,000% agreed with everything you said. I thought that was fantastic.
Good. Yeah. So we're not going to argue.
Not going to argue. Sorry.
No. Okay. All right.
Sorry, I'm going to agree with you. All right, so Louisa, tell all the people where to find you and your books.
Well, the books are, frankly, everywhere. When my first Louisa Morgan book came out, Secret History of Witches, was 2017, and it was just life-changing for me. I've always been doing okay. Mm-hmm. I was a mid-list author, and I was thrilled to be doing it. I never dreamed of being like a best-selling author particularly, but that book just really was a game changer for me. So, and I've just had so much fun with it because I've done all my homework. I paid my dues, and it's been a blast. I could never have predicted that it would happen, but it did. So,
yay.
Since then, I'm just so grateful. It's kind of, I always say that everything about that book, A Secret History of Witches, was magical. It was rejected a whole bunch of times. So everybody knows this is what happens. And then it landed on the right desk on the right day. The brilliant Lindsay Hall, who is now at Tor, but was at Orbit then. And everything from the day she acquired it, everything after that was pure magic. Wow. So that was really fun. So that's a long way of saying you can find the books anywhere. They should be at Barnes & Noble. They should be at your indie bookseller, which I love. I love indie bookstores, because they really serve communities in a very specific way, yeah. And I think that's wonderful. So Barnes & Noble, Amazon, any online or brick and mortar bookstore should have them. And if they don't, ask, because they will they will get it for you. Also, you can also come to louisamorgan.net, and there will be buttons there, you know, to click. My webmaster does all that. That's not my strong suit.
You might be surprised.
And then come and.
You might be surprised to know that we do our own websites too.
I'm not surprised. You guys do it all, and I am so impressed. And I'm glad I don't have to, because I don't think I'd do very well. Actually, I would. I mean, I would find a way, because I love doing what I do, and I love having an audience for my work. And if I weren't publishing with such a great publisher, with a wonderful publicist and a whole team that's doing a great job, if they weren't there, I would find a way, because that's what we do, isn't it? I mean, it's, to make art is the best thing in the world to me. And so I know I would do it. I wouldn't do it as well as you guys do, but I would try.
Oh, I appreciate that.
So, and then I would love to see some people who are interested in ghost stories to visit me on TikTok, and let me know what you think. Mm-hmm. Louisa Morgan 75. And then I'm also on Threads and Spoutable.
Okay.
Giving up on the site which shall not be named, because it's gotten kind of ugly. But, you know, I still check in there occasionally because some of my people are there. But we're finding other places to gather.
We just got on the Blue Sky recently.
Did you?
Yeah, it's okay. It's basically just like Twitter it's just like Twitter, basically, but with less people.
Less people. I'm finding that, because I'm politically active as well, that Threads is kind of a good replacement, and it's growing all the time. Mm-hmm. But Spoutable is really fun, and it's a lot of writers, which has been particularly nice for me.
Okay.
So, and you guys might want to check it
all
out.
Right.
Nice.
You can.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that one.
There's so many now,
right.
And it can be a time suck.
I know.
It can be a time suck, and so my daughter-in-law, who is an expert in these things. She told me, find the couple of social media sites that you enjoy and just focus on that, because you can't do it all.
Yep.
There's too many.
Right.
100%.
And we have to write.
Yep.
We have writing to do. Yes. Stories to tell.
That's sure. Right. All right. JH, tell the people where to find you.
Oh, you can find me at jhfleming.net. I'm also on way too many social media sites to list. You can find links on the website to those. Also on Fiverr, you can hire me as an editor. You can find my folk band on Bandcamp. It's Wildwood Minstrels. Where else? I think that's all of them, isn't it?
I wasn't even listening, to be honest, but I'm Philip Dreyer Duncan. And you can find me at philipdreyerduncan.com.
I don't think that's good.
And you can find the podcast at futurebestsellerpodcast.com. And thank you, Louisa, so much for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure.
It's great fun. Thank you.
Yeah. So glad we crashed your coffee clash.
Me too.
And got to have breakfast with you and get to know you a little bit.
Yeah.
And we will have you back on again.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. Thank you both, Phil and JH. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. And good luck with the new book.